Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On the show today, our occasional series, That Was a Hit, looks at the unexpected but undeniable pop chart power of a certain trumpeter and band leader. Also, two different guests will zoom in on how their memories of childhood inspire the art they're making now. We'll talk with author and filmmaker M.K. Asante about Buck, his new memoir about growing up in the city that he calls Killadelphia, Pistolvania. And singer-songwriter Siddhartha Khosla is here with his band Goldspot. Goldspot's new album was shaped by his family's experience of moving to the U.S. from India. And speaking of childhood, one of our listeners, Jeffrey, is a music fan who cut his teeth on a distinct style of music from the 70s. He sent us an interesting question via email. Listen to this. I'm curious, who are the Keith Emersons and Rick Wakemans of today? I love progressive rock and would love to hear what's out there today. Now, in case you don't know, Jeffrey's referring to two pioneering keyboard players of the 70s. Emerson played with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and Wakeman fueled the sound of this band, Yes. So who are the Keith Emersons and Rick Wakemans of today? We like Jeffrey's question so much that tomorrow on the show, we're going to try to answer it with some experts here in the studio. But if you have an answer to this question, who are the virtuosic, groundbreaking keyboard players of today? We want to hear it first. Leave us a message on our listener line, 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. 1612. You can also find our contact info online at soundcheck.org.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were sussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters are god thumb, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick.
The writer and filmmaker M.K. Asante has charted the history and politics of hip-hop. He's told the story of Kwanzaa, explored the power of poetry, all topics that are close to his heart. But his latest release is his most personal yet. It's a memoir called Buck. And in this book, M.K. Asante tells the story of his hardscrabble childhood in Philadelphia. With a brother in jail, his mother in a mental institution, and a frequently absent or distracted dad, a young M.K. learns to fend for himself and eventually find his place. Throughout, the lyrics and language of hip-hop burst off the page. M.K. Asante joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. M.K., welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
This may seem like an odd first question to a guy who has just published this book, but when did you write this?
I wrote this recently, I guess within the last year.
Okay.
But some parts of it were, some parts of it began a long time ago.
Because by the end of the story, you've been faced with the blank page that changes your life, and what you end up writing is the first paragraph of this book.
Exactly. Well, the first line, exactly.
So how much of this has this has been obviously a long process for you.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, well, the fall in Killadelphia, that was kind of like the first line I wrote when I was in that class. One of the first lines I wrote when I was in that class. And that became the beginning of the memoir. But there was an incredible distance between when I wrote that and then when I revisited the memoir, you know, because it took a while to kind of come back to that.
Now, one of the means through which you express yourself, in addition to your words, are those of your mother, excerpts from her journals, which you read when you weren't supposed to, and lyrics from various hip-hop songs.
Yeah.
Were these songs that you were listening to that were important to you as events were unfolding, or are these things you came to later?
Definitely. Well, yeah, you know, my mom's journal entries, though, that's one of the kind of narrative threads throughout the book. I'm sneaking and reading her journal entries, so you're seeing what she thinks about me and the family and the situation and everything that's going on around us. And then the music, you know, hip-hop has always been a soundtrack to my life. Everybody I know growing up in Philly and just everywhere, and my cousins in New York, we have what we call hip-hop to Tourette's. You know what I mean? So that means that we just, you know, we're just chilling, doing something, chopping onions, walking to the store, and we're just going to be spitting lyrics out. They just jump out of us at random times. We can't even control it. You know, I might just start doing it now. You know what I mean? So that I wanted to, you know, that was such a realistic thing for me then and even now that I wanted that to be a part of the story. And so what I did was I tried to find music and songs that I listened to back then, things mm-hmm. that, you know, because those songs, you know, and you can probably relate to this, and people who listen to a lot of music who listen to your show, I'm sure, you know, those songs from your childhood, you don't forget them. Right. You don't forget the song that you used to listen to when you hung out with your friends, you know, at the railroad tracks, or the song that you used to listen to when you got your first kiss or whenever. Those things really stick with you. And for me, it's lyrics. And so it was really easy to just, you know, revisit those lyrics and put them in the book.
Sometimes it's really striking how well those lyrics fit. I mean, we're talking a moment ago about a pivotal moment in your life. Your whole sort of adult life hinges on facing that blank page in a class with a teacher who finally gets it yeah. and knows how to unlock what's inside of you.
Yeah.
And there's this Black Star song, KOS.
Yeah.
It's like it almost matches up perfectly to that scene.
Exactly. And even, you know, and what I try to also do in the book is if you follow the hip-hop lyrics that start at the beginning of the book and all the way to the end of the book, a couple of things happen. One, you get to see kind of an evolution of hip-hop and how it grows and changes from 1995, circa 1995, mm-hmm. to around 1999, 2000. So you get to see hip-hop's change. You also get to see how what we listen to kind of influences what we do and our actions. So the music that I listen to begins to change as I begin to change. So all of a sudden, you go from listening to, you know, some hardcore kind of gangster stuff to what you're talking about, where Talib Kweli in that song says, finally, when you start to realize that life without knowledge is death in disguise, and you say, wow, like, and this is what I'm listening to at 17, and it's changing my perception on things. Yeah. And the other thing that happens with those lyrics is you go from kind of one form of hip-hop to another gradual form of hip-hop, and then finally, by the end of the book, it's my own lyrics, my own voice that I find, and the book is about finding my voice as a poet, as a writer, and so by the end, I'm quoting myself and listening to myself, and that's, you know, powerful for me.
So it's yet another kind of narrative arc to this book. The book is called Buck, a Memoir. My guest is M.K. Asante, the writer and filmmaker, and this is one of the songs that appears at this pivotal moment in his story. That life without knowledge is death in disguise. That's why knowledge yourself is like life after death. Apply it to your life, let destiny manifest. Different days, same confusion. We're gonna take this hip hop and keep it moving, shed a little light. Now y'all blooming like a flower with the power of the evident. Voices and drums, original instruments in the flesh, presently presenting my representation. With that word, determination. 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 Time in history is now, the present. So count your blessings, cause time can't define the essence. But you're stressing over time and you follow the Roman calendar. These people into cloning like Attica. You can bet they trying to lock you down like Attica. The African diaspora represents strength in numbers. A giant can't slumber forever. I know you gotta get that cheddar, whatever. And yo, I heard you twice the first time, money, get it together. You must be history, you repeating yourself out of the pages. You keeping yourself depleting your spiritual wealth. That quick cash, you'll get your ass quick fast in houses of detention. Inner city. That is Black Star, Mos Def and Talib Kweli, and the song KOS, Determination, lyrics to which appear in the book, Buck, a Memoir by M.K. Asante. And one of those lyrics talks about the African diaspora. You grew up in a very Afrocentric family. In Definitely. Fact, your father is sort of considered one of the kind of major proponents of Afrocentrism.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I grew up in a house where we were surrounded by, you know, I actually was born in Zimbabwe. My parents are from America, but they moved to Zimbabwe. You know, some people talk about moving back to Africa. Well, my parents actually did that. And so I was born in Zimbabwe, but we came back shortly after, and I was raised in Philly. And, you know, our house was full of, we were always constantly told about Africa, and our house was full of, you know, African masks and African books, and my dad wore dashikis every day. And so that was definitely a part of the reality, you know, mm-hmm. growing up.
And your mom and your dad had sort of given names, but then took African names.
Exactly.
And then you and your brother took, I mean, you write that you got to choose your own name, right?
No, well, not exactly. My parents, they changed their name from, you know, kind of Western names African names. And then with me, what me and my brother did is we just took, you know, we had nicknames in the street, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what, you know, it was kind of the same thing you're talking about, though. I think what the connectivity is naming yourself and kind of your choosing your own identity. And in a lot of ways, me and my brother did that. My brother's name is Daoud, and everybody called him Uzi,
right.
You know what I mean? And then my middle name is Kamalo, and everybody called me Malo. And Malo stood for me against law and order. You know, part of one of the themes in the book, I think, is rebellion and just being rebellious. I've always been kind of rebellious and had trouble with authority and stuff like that. So me against law and order just kind of fit perfectly.
And you know, you got expelled from numerous schools, including the good school your parents spent so much money to put you in. Yeah. You end up in jail. Your brother ends up in, like, serious hardcore prison in Arizona. You make some money selling drugs and stuff. So, you know, you're on the streets despite coming from what is clearly a very literate family. I mean, with all due respect, you may only be the second best writer in your family. I mean, your mom's letters are really, really well written.
I know. I told her, I said, Ma, you should get a book deal after this. But, yeah, you know, and also you got to remember with those letters, she didn't intend for anyone to read those.
Right.
So that's how she writes to herself.
And she writes to herself to
her
Carol.
Old name, to Carol, her old name, which is interesting.
And then signs herself with her
New name. Yeah,
the name of Amina.
It's very deep.
But so this is the point where, you said before, the hip-hop in the book changes as you change.
Yeah.
So you're out on the streets like 14, right?
Yeah.
13, 14.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like Tupac.
Yeah.
Seems to be really big for you.
Yeah, I mean, Tupac has always been. Someone actually asked me last night. They said, I was at a book signing, and they said, has anyone made the Tupac comparisons? Because, you know, Tupac came from a family of activists and you know, revolutionaries and kind of, you know, really Afrocentric parents, and also, you know, lived in urban cities and got involved in things or whatever, and they just saw similarity, and they asked me about it, and I said, well, no, I never really heard that comparison, but one thing about me is I've got one person in my office where I work, one person image, and that's Pac, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So Pac for me, even now, you know, is a huge figure. He was multi-talented, you know, he wasn't just a rapper, but he was a poet, a true poet. He was an actor. He lived his life as art, really. And so he's one of my greatest inspirations, actually.
And he dies on the same day that they come for your mom.
Exactly.
To take her away.
Yeah.
And that's another kind of pivotal moment in M.K. Asante's book. And he quotes from this song from Tupac.
I heard rumor I died, murdered in cold blood, traumatized. Pictures of me in my final state, you know mama cry. But that was fiction. Some cabin got the story twisted. Like I no longer existed, mysteriously missing. I'm throwing worldwide, baby. I ain't hard to find. Well, I spend most of my time on California grind. Watching for thieving, I'm cautious, it's like I'm barely breathing. Putting the bullet in the give me the reason. See me in hope, I'm intoxicated or slightly faded. You tried to play me, now homicide's my only payment.
That's Tupac Shakur with Ain't Hard to Find from his album All Eyes on Me. It's quoted in M.K. Asante's new book called Buck, a memoir. Why Buck?
Oh, young Buck, Buck Wild, Buck Shot, Buck Town, Black Buck, Slave Buck, Make Buck, Buck Now. You know, buck is one of those words that's just loaded, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple, short word. You know, I kind of got tired of these books. I wrote a few books before this, and they always had long titles, you know, da 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 da, you know, subtitles and all that. And I said, I want a book that just smacks you in the face with one word, enough said, but one word that has so many more meanings.
Right.
And then I think what Buck really is about for me, and this is what Tupac represented to me too, is like bucking the system, like mm-hmm. going against the grain, not falling into the traps. You know, for me, being Buck and being a true rebel isn't about like going to jail and doing those kinds of things, because those things are really like stereotypical. You know what I mean? Being a real Buck is, and really bucking the system is kind of going against the norm, going against the status quo, and being your own man, carving your own path. So to me, Buck just represents everything.
And there's no colon subtitle
nothing,
here.
It's none just, of that.
Buck
just
is the name of it.
B-U-C-K.
The writer and filmmaker M.K. Asante with me on Soundcheck. So we mentioned this Tupac song. He dies on the same day they come to get your mother. Why did they take your mom away?
You know, my mom was dealing with mental health issues. You know, my mom is bipolar. She's was suicidal when I was coming up around these years. So she tried to kill herself multiple times. So this was one of the times where she tried to kill herself. And, you know, we talk about that in the book very openly. One of the things we wanted to do with this book, you know, even talking to my mom about this, you know, she wanted to help other people who are dealing with this because, you know, we're not alone. And that's what you were saying at the top of the show, you know, a family that seems literate and, you know, how can these things happen? Well, it happens to all families. And, you know, it's so important that we be real about it and put it out there and not pretend like, you know, this stuff doesn't happen, because
right.
it's happening everywhere all the time.
Your brother gets thrown in jail for, you know, a number of years
yep.
for having sex with an underage girl in yep. Arizona. Your yep. dad is absent for much of the book.
Yeah.
But then something remarkable happens towards the end of the book. Not just the blank page that turns your life around,
yeah.
but coming home and finding your mom
yeah.
like off her meds and
yeah.
and working on
yeah.
her choreography and entering
yeah.
this dance competition that
yeah.
she actually ends up winning.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, and there's a song playing
yeah.
in this scene, and it's the one time in the book when the music leaves the world of hip hop, and this is the song.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh,
that is Sam Cooke with A Change Is Gonna Come.
I was telling your producer before we came in here, that is the only song in this world that has ever made me cry. That song, I mean, I was driving one day. I wasn't even expecting to you know, obviously not expecting to cry. You know what I mean? I'm driving, and I'm in the hood. I'm driving in the hood. I'm in Baltimore, you know what I mean? And I'm at a stoplight, and the song came on, and I just couldn't help it, man. It brings up so much for me, man. That's the power of music, you
yeah.
know? It's crazy.
And clearly for your mom, it meant something, too.
Deep song for my mom. I remember her choreography that she has to this song. And, you know, she's a dance choreographer, and, you know, this song, oh, just powerful.
And the way it reads in the book, it's like if you made a movie of this book and just picked the perfect song to be in the soundtrack, it would be A Change Is Gonna Come.
Has to be.
You are a filmmaker. Will there be a film version of this?
There's definitely a movie version that we're working on. We're in development right now. I'm working on the script. You know, Don Cheadle's production company contacted us last week about the rights to the film and the TV stuff. So, yeah, there's definitely going to be a movie. I don't know who's going to be all involved in it yet, but I know I'll be involved in it. But yeah, we're definitely making a movie out of it.
And are you any thoughts about what the music will be? Will it be the songs that are quoted in the book?
It definitely has to. You know, it's about the 90s, you know what I'm saying? Late 90s, yeah. Coming up, growing up, coming of age. So that has to be the music, you know, has to have some of the music that's in the book. I think we'll probably do some original music as well. But yeah, definitely.
Well, now by the end of the book, you know, a change has come to you and to your family. And you mentioned before the lyrics of the hip hop quotes, you know, the tenor of the hip hop has changed over the course of the book.
Yeah.
Till at the end, we're getting your own hip hop.
Yeah.
So you've been doing some rapping.
Yeah.
This is not a new thing for you.
Well, you know, I started off as a poet, a spoken word poet, and it's evolved. You know, what was so amazing to me was, you know, you hear, you know, Black Star and Talib Kweli and Mos Def quoted in this book their lyrics because they were powerful and transformative to me when I was coming up. So it's amazing for me to now, my first hip-hop song that I ever made is with Talib Kweli. And so that just is amazing. It's called Gods in the Hood.
This is you, Talib Kweli, and Raskaz.
Yep.
This is my guest, MK Asante.
Gods in the hood, trapped in facades in the hood. Always getting even, cause what's the odds in the hood? So we mob, so misunderstood, we overstand. City of applause, clapping like it's Pakistan. Rosewood to Rosecrans, young boys on a Conan. Freedom or death, not a slogan. Like the nature of the threat ain't a slow jam. My Elohim's off that wet through them badlands. Black cinematics, so visual. And if it's gods in the ghetto, this the ritual. Children of the night, candlelight, the vigil. Smoke a L with Ellison, now we visible. Something out of nothing, maximize the minimal. Prison and dust, turning gods to criminals. Forcing us to revise these spirituals. For your mental, reviving our pinnacle.
That is my guest MK Asante's verse from the song Gods in the Hood, done with Raskaz and Talib Kweli. You did you direct the video for this?
Yeah, I did. It's about to come out like in like 2 weeks.
Very good. So then there will be at some point a film version of the book, and will there be more recordings?
Definitely. We're doing a soundtrack for the book with original music and excerpts from the book. We're doing the movie. All that stuff people can follow. I'm mkasante.com at mkasante. They can follow all the moves that we're making. But yeah, it'll definitely be, the soundtrack comes out in like a month or so. And so the movie, you know, just, and more recordings. You know, I'm working on an album, so... You know, I hope I come back and bust it up with you again, John.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. MK Asante, writer, filmmaker, hip-hop artist, and professor at Morgan State University. The new book is called Buck, a Memoir. It is a really memorable story and very well told.
Thanks.
Thanks, MK Asante, my guest on Soundcheck, and The Roots making a quick appearance in the book and on our show.
I want to be able to reach an MC and reach a little child in the same degree. And my elders excel. I mean, what the hell? We might as well bridge these gaps at all before we fall in the fire.
Coming up, another installment in our occasional series on surprising chart successes. We call it That Was a Hit. Today, we look at the smooth trumpeter who crafted incredibly catchy songs and became a record mogul. And later, pop sounds from India and the U.S. come together in the music of the New York band Goldspot. They'll play songs from their new album, Aerogram, live in the studio, later on Soundcheck.
Very necessary to shine, legendarily, heavily refined.
Contemporaries like the Roots are so rad, it's like, damn, which bag did they come out of?
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks...
That was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
It is time for another installment of That Was a Hit, our series about songs that have unexpectedly made their way to the top of the charts. And joining me here in the studio is music critic and pop chart columnist Chris Melanfi. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you so much, John.
So what are we talking about? We're not talking about just one song today, are we?
No, we're talking about a couple. And in fact, I would say we're basically talking about a whole career. Because this
so this is That Was a Hit career?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Pretty much. I had to research this person for an article I was doing for NPR Music a couple of months ago. And the more I learned about him, the more his entire career looked like a string of improbabilities. Let me lead into it this way. We'll tease it this way. Who do you think has the most number one albums in the 1960s? What act?
The Beatles, I would assume.
That is correct. Now, who has the second most list of number one albums?
Well, you've already said it's a he, so I'll go with maybe Elvis?
Nope.
No?
It's Herb Albert. Specifically, it's Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. And that's who I want to talk about today.
Oh, my goodness. And everybody over the age of 40 just went, what? Herb Albert? Yeah!
Yeah, pretty much. And everybody under the age of 40 probably doesn't know
who we're talking
about. Or if they do, they've vaguely heard of the guy. I would say that Herb Albert is one of those guys who... you don't know you know what he's done, but you know it. He was an instrumentalist. He's a trumpet player, mm-hmm. A very, very good one. One of the first things that's improbable about the guy is he's not of Latin descent. He is a Jew from Los Angeles who learned the trumpet very young and developed a love for it. And in the early 60s, he was traveling through Mexico and he saw a bullfight. And he was captivated by the passion of the matador and the people in the arena. And he decided to try to capture that with a song that he composed called The Lonely Bull. And after recording it, he decided he needed a name for this act. And so he made up the name the Tijuana Brass. There was no Tijuana Brass. He overdubbed himself playing trumpet multiple times, and that was the Tijuana Brass.
Wow.
To make a long story short, in 1962, this record took off, became a top 10 hit, and suddenly Herb Albert found himself needing to actually recruit players to be the Tijuana Brass. And so he created an entire group. He then proceeded to spend the rest of the 1960s recording hit album after hit album.
Everybody's parents had Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass records. My parents had it.
Yeah.
Everybody I knew, their parents had these records.
You are not exaggerating. I mean, when I looked at some of the statistics, the five number one albums that Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass scored, they scored in a streak from 1965 to 1968, just one after another after another. A couple of them missed the number one spot, but almost everything the guy put out went to number one. The very first of those number one albums is probably most famous for its cover, an album called Whipped Cream and Other Delights. Herb Albert, when he used to play songs from this album in concert, would joke with the audience, "I'm sorry, I can't play you the cover." It is well known. You've probably seen it, if you don't remember that you've seen it. It's a young woman buried up to her shoulders in what appears to be whipped cream, and she's got a dollop of whipped cream on her finger. And it was a very sexy cover, and probably half of the 6 million copies it sold in 1965 were due to that cover.
All right, so everything about this guy's career is unexpected. He's an unexpected success, but there is a number one song that even by Herb Albert standards is unusual.
That's right. He doesn't score his first number one hit until 1968, and here's the crazy thing. He's an instrumentalist, and his first number one hit has a vocal. It's a song called This Guy's in Love with You. It's a Burt Bacharach composition. To be specific, Burt Bacharach with Hal David, his then-songwriting partner. Interestingly, it's the first number one hit for Burt Bacharach. He'd already had a string of top 10 hits for Dusty Springfield and for Dionne Warwick, but he'd never had a number one hit. So talk about improbable. Here's a guy who's made his name as an instrumentalist. He had top 10 hits mm-hmm. that were instrumental. He has his first number one hit with a vocal. And Herb Albert, let's just say his voice is not at all terrible. It's pleasant, but it's not as good as his trumpet playing.
This is the song that went to the top of the charts in 1968 from Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass.
I've heard some talk. They say you think I'm fine. Yes, I'm in love. And what I'd do to make you mine, tell me now, is it so?
Albert and the Tijuana Brass, This Guy's in Love with You, a Bacharach David tune that became a number one hit for Herb Albert in 1968 as a singer.
That's right.
Well-known trumpeter, Chris Melanfi, with us on Soundcheck for another installment of That Was a Hit. He has all these hits with the trumpet, and then the number one song is, you know, I mean, that just sounds like a guy in a room singing. It doesn't sound like a professional voice, which may have been part of the charm.
It was part of the charm. First of all, it's good that it was a Bacharach composition because you know those Bacharach compositions, they were very forgiving. If you had a limited range, you could sing them really well or you could kind of do them in a medium range, and that's exactly how Albert does it. There's a brief trumpet solo in the middle of the record. It doesn't even last very long. I should talk about how this song became a hit because this will be a useful segue to the other number one hit Herb Albert had much later. It became a hit because of television. Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass were given a TV special called Beat of the Brass in the spring of 1968. And as Albert was preparing for the special, he said, I want to do something that involves my wife. You know, this is in the era of variety shows.
Right. Now, his wife was a singer, right?
Yes, I believe that's right. And anyway, he wanted to do something expressing his love and affection for his wife, and they gave him this song, This Guy's in Love with You, and said, okay, just for this one number, why don't you do a vocal? And he sings it. And the shocker, which CBS didn't expect, A&M Records, Albert's record label didn't expect, was that the following day, CBS was besieged with calls from the public asking, where can we buy that song that Herb Albert sang to his wife on the beach? And, you know, there was a little vignette, and it was very romantic, and that was how the song became a hit.
All right. As if the improbabilities haven't piled up enough already, you mentioned his record label, A&M. Tell us what the A in A&M stands for.
It stands for Albert. It stands for his last name. He and Jerry Moss, that's the M in A&M, they founded this record label at the beginning of the 60s, just as Albert's Tijuana Brass career took off. And frankly, this is how Albert is best known and most respected in the industry. A little tidbit, Albert is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but not as a performer. He and Moss were inducted about 7-8 years ago as non-performers for founding A&M. A&M is a very respected independent label, no longer existing in its old form. It was acquired in multiple mergers.
Right.
But at its height, it had an amazing roster. It was an independent record company, not affiliated in the 60s and 70s with any of the majors.
But the Police were on A&M.
The Police were on A&M. Suzanne Vega-Later was on A&M. Joe Jackson, Cat Stevens, Peter Frampton. I mean, the list goes on and on. The Carpenters were a huge seller for A&M.
So he's this successful business mogul. He's this unexpected success as a pop star in the 60s.
Right.
And by the late 70s, you would think, all right, here's a man who's had his day. He's had his time. And he comes roaring back.
Yeah, well, this is equally as unlikely, and television plays a role in this. Albert had one additional number one hit in 1979 at the height of disco. And at this point, his career has been pretty chilly for about a decade. Despite being a very wealthy record mogul, he continued to record, and I think he wanted to be in the mix. And the story, as I understand it, was that he was considering, on the recommendation of some of his representation, to redo some of his old Tijuana Brass hits in disco form. He kind of threw his hands up and said, I'm not really interested in that. But he's in the studio and somebody brings him this other instrumental for a song called Rise. Now, this is more in his wheelhouse. It's an actual instrumental with a trumpet hook. But remember, it's now been a decade since this guy has had any hits at all. So the idea of him having a number one hit is fairly improbable at this time. And I guess the thing to really talk about is how it finally became a hit, considering his long cold streak prior to that.
Let's hear a little bit of the song first, and then we can talk about how this song became the number one song in America in 79. That is Herb Alpert without the Tijuana Brass, but back on top of the charts. Chris Melanfi, how did this happen?
It happened once again thanks to television and in a super improbable way. So he releases the song in the summer of 79. it starts meandering up the charts, very low down on the Billboard Hot 100, not moving very fast. And then the producers of the daytime soap opera General Hospital, yes, that General Hospital, decided that they needed a song to play in the background of a pivotal scene between the probably the two most famous characters they ever had on the show, Luke and Laura. Luke and Laura were this torrid couple on the show. And there was a forthcoming plot where, I hate to bring it up, but Luke was going to rape Laura in a kind of misunderstood confrontation between the two. And they chose Rise by Herb Albert. It played in the background of that scene. And what then happened, remember, in the late 70s, General Hospital was like a top-rated soap opera,
watched by
tens of millions of people at this time. And every time the Laura character remembered this incident with Luke, they would bring back the Herb Albert recording. So it actually played on General Hospital, not just in the scene that was most watched, but over and over again for several months. And that was the catalyst that finally sent the song flying up the charts until by October of 1979, it was number one. It actually evicted a Michael Jackson song from the number one spot and spent 2 weeks at number one.
Well, that is the unlikely tale of Herb Albert with and without the Tijuana Brass, a couple of number one hits in our series, That Was a Hit. Chris Melanfi is a music critic and contributor to Billboard and CMJ and NPR Music's The Record blog. And Chris, you mentioned that people who might not think they know Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass may get a shock of recognition when they hear some of his music.
Right.
This is one of those pieces. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. The song is called Spanish Flea, but to millions of Americans, it will always be the theme from The Dating Game, old TV show. In a moment on Soundcheck, live music from the East Meets West band called Goldspot, right here on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On his first two albums with his band Goldspot, the musician Siddhartha Khosla has combined the pop tradition of the Western world, say the Beatles, with pop and Bollywood sounds from India. In fact, the band Goldspot gets its name from a sugary soda that Siddhartha enjoyed as a kid, living with a foot in each of those worlds. That personal connection is even deeper on Goldspot's new album, Aerogram. On this first song that they're going to play for us, you'll hear a bit of Siddhartha Khosla's family story. Here is Goldspot playing New Haven Green live on Soundcheck.
It was September in the 70s. Three of us flying into seats, holding the statues of sandalwood. The airport is filled with the neighborhood. In the back of an old white ambassador, you turn a deaf ear to your father. He gave you a grand from the black market. It stayed in the glove, you would not take it. So why the words on napkins for no one to read? It's never been black or white or what we thought it would be. You carry the case. Officer in blue, he welcomed you, gave you the key to your living room. You took up the last carry-on, two of you turning into three. We'll read all the letters you never sent and make the old places new again. So why the words on napkins for no one to read? It's never been black or white or what we thought.
That's called New Haven Green. It's a song from the band Goldspot, playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. You'll find it on Goldspot's new album, their third, called Aerogram. And Goldspot is led by singer, songwriter, and keyboard player Siddhartha Khosla, playing... Is that an omnichord that you were just playing?
Yep.
Wow, haven't seen one of those in years. Rob Calder was playing a bouzouki on that song, a Greek string instrument. We heard Adam Chelensky playing bass, although both Rob and Adam are about to switch instruments, switch to different instruments. Jake Owen on guitar, Ezra Oakland behind our drum kit, Chris McIntyre playing trombone. They are the band Goldspot. And the album Aerogram, Siddhartha, this, you know, even the cover art, you know, it looks like an airmail letter. You know, maybe sent from India to America or vice versa. That idea of the travel, the journey that your family took, that's the topic here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a pretty biographical record. It's basically the story of my parents' journey from India to the U.S. in the late 70s. And they left India in 1976 with $8 in their pockets. Hmm. At the time, India had basically no foreign currency reserve, because they were importing much more than they were exporting back then, and to deal with a lot of the hunger problems and the hunger crisis in India. And so there was a finite amount of U.S. dollars that you could take out of India to go to the U.S.
And that finite amount was eight?
For individuals or for couples like that, it was eight. And so my parents left in 1976 with $8, and they moved to New Haven in Connecticut, and they started their life here.
So now you were born here.
Yes.
But spent some time growing up in India.
Yeah. When I was born, you know, both of them were working full-time jobs and going to school and really struggling to make ends meet. They had, you know, they came with pretty much nothing.
$8.
Yeah, exactly. And it was very difficult for them to, I mean, the true story of that was they couldn't find any good babysitters that they could afford. And what ended up happening was, you know, I was like the baton that they would pass on in between each other. They'd meet each other in the middle of the street when one was coming back from work and the other one about to go to work, and just pass the baton, you know, between the two of them. And that got very tiring, and they were trying to make this living. So they kind of had no other option but to save up enough money to send me back home to live with my grandparents in New Delhi. Mm. And we spent about 2 years apart. And in that time, it was 24 or something dollars a minute to make a long distance phone call. There was no Vodafone, no Skype, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously if they came with eight, they weren't gonna spend three times the budget that they came in with to make a phone call for a minute. And so the only other option was to exchange letters, but via this cassette. And so my mom would record her voice on this evergreen colored cassette, send it to me in India, and tell me she loved me or sang me a lullaby so I could hear her voice. And I would, you know, my grandparents would hit record. I would say something unintelligible at the age of two, and it was sent back to my mom and dad, and we exchanged that cassette letter for 2 years back and forth.
Same cassette over and over?
Same cassette. So
that's too bad. Otherwise, you might have like a whole library of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have that cassette somewhere?
Yeah, the cassette's at home. Yeah, my mom has it at the house somewhere. She's got it locked away because she's afraid to give that to me because she knows I'll lose it. So
were you old enough while in India to have had any kind of formative musical experiences there?
You know what? Most of my musical training, just by listening and learning music, actually came here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. By the time I came back, you know, from 2 to 4, I probably didn't remember too much.
Right.
But I did listen to all the old Bollywood music and all the old Indian film music that my grandparents would listen to in India, and my cousins would sing songs. And so we used to sing all these old Indian folk songs. So it must have been ingrained in me in some way. And then when I came back here, my parents, you know, listened to those. They had these cassette tapes, these mixes that they brought with them from India. And so I grew up listening to that, you know. And I still listen to it. It's, you know, some of my favorite music is the music that came out of the 50s, 60s, and 70s in India.
Band Gold Spot from the 2009 movie Today's Special, which starred Asif Manvi from The Daily Show, and their arrangement of Ina Meena Deeka, a song from the late 50s from the Bollywood film industry that Gold Spot covered to great effect. Gold Spot's new record, their third, is called Aerogram. It is out now. They're playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Now, Siddhartha was talking about this cassette that he and his parents sort of mailed back and forth to each other when he was in India and they were here. That is the subject of the song that they're about to play for us. Here, with the song Evergreen Cassette, is the band Gold Spot.
Fly up there and reach for it too. It's the story of something older and bigger than me and you. And you told it in a letter in the form of an evergreen cassette. And I played it in the morning till after the sun would set. Mother, I believe that half of everything I hear is true. Between you and me, I believe the antidotes too. In the veranda, in the midnight heat, cousins and I would wait for the rains, singing songs about America, and then the first drops came. So don't worry, even though you were oceans and continents away. I heard evergreen hits, lullabies, and everything you had to say. See, Mother, I believe that half of everything I hear. Between you and me, I believe the anecdotes too. If they get you through, if time could be bent with the drop of a tear, you'd see it rained in our house for a year. This is the sound of the beat. line can't be bent with the drop of a tear. And though you say you missed out all of those years, your voice on the tapes always kept us near. See, Mother, I believe that half of everything I hear is true. Between you and me, I believe in everything you knew.
That is the band Goldspot, live on Soundcheck with a song called Evergreen Cassette, which you will also find on their new album called Aerogram. The band's playing at the Winery at St. George, upstate in Mohegan Lake, New York, on September 11th, and playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. And Siddhartha, who had moved from one keyboard to the other, the omnichord to the harmonium, is now moving back to the omnichord for this next song, which is called The Borderline. Once again, the band Goldspot, live in the Soundcheck studio.
I've been away so long, and Father, I don't know where I have gone. A tide brought me here, I called it.
Bye.
Once again, the band Goldspot, live on Soundcheck with a song called The Borderline. Their newest album, their third, is called Aerogram. It's out now. And Sid, it's been great having you in the band performing here. Congratulations on Aerogram. It's a great story.
Thank you very much.
And makes for a fine record. The band is Goldspot, and this is music from their record.
I know it's hard enough, baby, to keep our head above water. But I know you're strong enough, baby, to stay afloat a bit longer. Places we will go.
The song's called If the Hudson Overflows from Goldspot's new album, Aerogram. Tomorrow on the show, a visit from the comedian Kurt Braunohler, who co-founded the long-running series Hot Tub with his comedy partner Kristen Schaal, plus live music from the super prolific garage rocker Ty Siegel. I'm John Schaefer. Join me again tomorrow at 9 or live on the web at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org.